Hello and welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC here on ESPN Plus. I'm Dan Thomas. Lots of people joining me throughout the show, the likes of Gab Marcotti, Sebastian Salazar, Julie Foudy, Ali Moreno and Craig Burley. Plus, we'll be discussing the clip that has gone global. Ian Dark in his back garden playing soccer. If you haven't seen it, it honestly is absolutely brilliant. We start today's show, though, as we do every day, looking at how the coronavirus is affecting football around the world. And discussions continue, don't they, as to when football can restart. Interesting stuff from both the heavy FA in Italy and Spain. Let's start, shall we, with Italy coming out and saying, I'm aware that it's still too early to think of a date, but we must think positively. We'll try our best to even play at the cost of asking for support from UEFA and FIFA to go beyond June the 30th, therefore also taking advantage of July and August. Right now, there's no room for individual interests. I plead for common sense. Meanwhile, Luis Rubiales, the Spanish FA president, came out and said, we think it's practically impossible to resume competition at the beginning of May. Whether the contracts are extended beyond June the 30th or not, all the clubs will be in the same position. Well, I want to bring in Gab Marcotti to discuss this. Gab, as we hear Reuters reporting that they have seen FIFA suggesting that players' contracts can be extended and the transfer window moved to sort all of this out. It seems to be that everyone is going to be on the same page on this and common sense is prevailing.
Well, I mean, one of the most common sense issues was how do you resolve the June 30th issue, right? Where contracts expire on June 30th, then players would become unemployed. Ordinarily, they'd be free agents, but then they'd have nowhere to go to because the transfer window wouldn't be opened. So that is something that needs to be resolved. That proposal that Reuters mentioned, I mean, in the story, Reuters says that this is just one proposal that FIFA's emergency committee are looking at. But increasingly, I think people have to be open to the possibility that you may not be able to wrap things up by June 30th, even in a truncated form. Now, the one thing that we should bear in mind, though, is that right now, both the two gentlemen that you mentioned, Rubiales and Gravina, in Spain and Italy, they're under pressure because leagues are telling them, we want to play out our fixtures, and simply from a cash flow perspective. So, you know, they're saying everybody's going to have to make sacrifices. We're willing to push beyond that, but, you know, you guys have to give something up on the other side as well, and this is the only way that we get through it.
So, Gab, let's take someone like Hakim Ziyech as an example. Obviously, supposed to be moving to Chelsea on July the 1st. What, in theory, would happen with him?
Well, that's actually a really good example because that's another category of player, right? So, under normal circumstances, June 30th, his contract with Ajax expires. July 1st, the transfer window opens, and he becomes a Chelsea player. He's already signed a contract to do that. So FIFA have to sort out, well, how do we handle this situation? Because if Ajax still have competitive fixtures to play, can we extend his contract and simply move the opening of the transfer window forward? Say we move everything forward a month or 2 months. Now, the difficulty here is Hakim Ziyech could also turn around and say, well, hang on a minute. Why do I have to do this unilaterally? The contract that I signed says I finish working on June 30th. Can you forcibly extend me for another month or 2 months? And I think he'd have a strong case in courts, should he not want to continue playing for Ajax, to say, you know what, I've done my time, I'm done. I don't want to go play and maybe, you know, run the risk of getting injured or whatever else. So FIFA can move the transfer window forward and say to Ziyech, okay, fine, well, then you'll be unemployed for a month or whatever. I don't know that they can forcibly force him or the many other players in that position, you know, to simply tack on months at the end of their contract. I think that's going to be an important negotiation. I think the players' unions are going to come into that. They're going to want to have a voice. I'm not sure, you know, you could do this on a one-size-fits-all basis.
But not speaking on Hakim Ziyech's behalf, but surely given everything that's going on, you would understandably just stay at Ajax, wouldn't you, until the end of your contract, even though it would be extended by 2 months. It seems very strange if a player is about to say, no, you know what, I've given you my time that I agreed, because no one obviously could have foreseen this happening.
Look, it's true. I mean, we don't know, but I think there will be players who are in that situation. I mean, think of players, you know, who might be concerned that, you know, they might pick up an injury, for example, and that might end up voiding their contract going forward. You'd have to go and find some sort of mechanism where the contract becomes binding even if you pick up an injury in that period, for example. But equally, there might be players who might say, you know what, I mean, Ziyech is different because Ajax are in a head-to-head fight for the title. But if you have some guy at some mid-table club, he might, well, who already has a deal in place to go somewhere else, he might say, you know what, well, why do I have to keep playing for you? You know, why can't my contract end now, and why can't my new contract start when it's supposed to start with my pay bump elsewhere? I mean, you know, these guys are workers like everybody else. So there will have to be some give and take. There's going to have to be a lot of negotiating. There's also going to be other players who are going to welcome this, right? Players who's, you know, who might have become free agents, unsure of whether they're going to get another club, and now all of a sudden they get another 2 months' wages. I think that's going to be important as well. But clearly, there's going to be a very, very big knock-on effect.
Meanwhile, a lot of people stuck indoors at the moment, and so desperate they might be for entertainment. There are now 2 episodes of the Gab and Jules podcast every single week. Gab, I saw a clip from one, your latest one. You're showing what, Gab, your 94 World Cup pass. What's that about?
It's not my 94 World Cup pass. It's called a ticket. It's what people use to get into football matches. I wasn't covering the World Cup professionally in 1994. I was in college. But I had the privilege of going to a game. And weirdly, it's something I found. Is obviously, being when you're home and you've got a little more time to yourself, you go and you clean out closets and the like. And I found that souvenir. It was from the 94 World Cup, Giant Stadium, Italy against the Republic of Ireland. Republic of Ireland, of course, beating Italy 1-0, Ray Houghton scoring the goal. And I still had this enduring memory of 60, 70, 80,000 Irishmen going over and over again, ooh, ah, Paul McGrath, say ooh, ah, Paul McGrath, over and over and over and over again.
Did you cry?
I didn't cry because, although it did kind of bring me back to my younger years, but I did think back. It was kind of an emotional thing. I wasn't upset. I was more upset on the day because, of course, we'd lost to the Republic of Ireland, the team that we expected to beat. But in the end, you know, Italy did get to the final of that World Cup and lost it on penalties. So, you know, things even out.
And, of course, Sesame Street style, you talked about the letter B, a team of current players with a surname that begins with B. Interesting, Gab, no Gareth Bale in this team.
No, look, I had a little bit of fun with it. I put guys in there that I liked. So, for example, I put the Barnes brothers, Harvey and Ashley, who, of course, aren't actually brothers. But if you notice, every time Craig Burley, whose name also starts with a B, brings up Harvey Barnes, he calls him young Harvey Barnes, which is not an adjective he uses for other people. I have Ashley Barnes in there because he's kind of like the Sergio Ramos of strikers, in the sense that you hate him and he's horrible. But then secretly you wouldn't mind having him on your team because he's got big stones. Ever Banega I have in there simply because of his wild and wacky career and adventures with cams and in toilets. And of course, yep, I have not one but 2 representatives from Sheffield United. George Baldock at right back and Chris Basham at centre back, a.k.a. better known as Basham Bauer, for the way he comes forward with the ball.
I've been told you'd be getting a lot of traffic from this, Gab.
It's proving to be weirdly super popular. Now, some people go and take this very seriously in the terms of, like, oh, what is my best possible 11? How do I get the right tactical balance? Stuff like that. Other people just put in players that they like. We've had a lot of debates about, you know, eligibility. For example, I had Allison in the A's, and then a bunch of pedants came forward and says, oh, but his last name is Becker, you need to have him in the B's. My word is final on this, of course, as is Jules's. So no Allison Becker. Allison He gets a start for the A team. No place for him on the B team.
Gab Marcotti, thank you very much. You can download the latest edition of the Gab and Jules podcast, where they're joined by Sid Lowe as well. You can do that over on the website.
It's your home speaking, and I need you to do me a couple of favors. First, could you get that blueberry that rolled under the fridge last week? It's throwing my feng shui off. Second thing, bundle your home and car insurance with GEICO. It's easy, and we could save money. Lastly, I know you were thinking of painting the nursery back to off-white, but I'm actually feeling this baby blue. Didn't think it was my color, but I am pulling it off.
GEICO. For bundling made easy, go to geico.com today.
Foot odor throwing you off your game? Stick to a winning game plan with Odor Eaters, featuring three advanced odor and wetness fighters. The lineup provides long-lasting odor control plus more to keep your feet on their game.
Odor Eaters powder provides outstanding moisture control. Clear drying spray is the MVP in preventing athlete's foot, while insoles work continuously to manage wetness while adding a layer of comfort. Pick up today at Walmart, Target, CVS, Dollar General, or other fine retailers.
Odor Eaters. Destroy foot odor with the best in odor defense.
The newspapers in England full of speculation once again about the future of Jadon Sancho, heavily linked to a move to Manchester United. Craig Burley is with us. Craig, if he rang you to ask for some advice, what would you tell him to do?
Well, it's funny, Dan, because, you know, I don't think there's many, if any, people that are not huge fans of this young man. Multi-talented, super confident teenager. With the world at his feet, but the dynamic has changed somewhat, and I know there are a lot of big clubs, particularly in England, but there'll be other clubs in other countries around Europe, and possibly even in Germany itself, chasing this guy, and he has to make the right decisions. Look, the answer is, could he make a move and step into one of the big boys and play? Yes, because Borussia Dortmund, they're a big club, they're a great club, but they are pretty much a little bit of a selling club. They've shown that before. But my concern would be, Dan, that he's in a good place at the moment. Yeah, the season's been disrupted, but they were in the title race. And he's getting game time. And I think, bearing in mind the Euros have moved to 2021, next year becomes super important for a lot of players, for all players, but for a lot of guys who may be thinking about making a move to make sure they get game time. Now, we know if the Euros had been played this summer, as it was scheduled, Jadon Sancho was having a fantastic season, and he was getting game time, and Gareth Southgate, there's a fair chance he would have been in that starting 11 for England. Now, if he makes a move in the summer, leading up to the Euros, which are now in 2021, and he doesn't get that game time, the whole thing changes for him. And so I think he has to be very important, or very careful about what he does. And actually, now that the Euros have moved, and if that for him is important, and I think it is for most players, I think he's in actually a very good place to maybe spend another 12 or 15 months at the club he's at, because we know he's going to get a platform to showcase his talents.
Is there an argument to say that Manchester United, in fact, is a step down at the moment from Borussia Dortmund?
Well, everybody was gushing about Man United before the shutdown for this global pandemic, because by their standards, they had got better. But they'd set the bar so low, and it was such desperation that they got Bruno Fernandes in, that all of a sudden this guy showed just how bad they were, with his recent very good performances before everything, as I say, was sort of shuttled up. We don't know how Man United were going to finish the season, or may finish the season if it indeed restarts. We don't know that. You know, they might finish behind Sheffield United. They might finish behind Tottenham. They might finish behind Wolves. We just don't have those answers. They may be not. They maybe end up in the top four, and it would have been Champions League football. We just don't have those answers at the moment. But I certainly tell you one thing, if it was Liverpool and Man U, looking at the two clubs, I'm looking at Liverpool. But then I'm a little bit more concerned about my game time there. And so you've got to hedge all these things up. And that's why I say, Dan, because we now expect the Euros to happen in 2021, which would be about 15 months' time, it is hugely important for him to be playing 35, 40, 45 games next year for whatever club it's at, and showcasing his talents. Now, is he good enough to make that move and play at a new club? He is. But there are no guarantees, apart from the fact we know if he stays at Dortmund under Lucien Favre, he's going to get game time. And I think for a young player, that is very, very important.
A lot more, by the way, on Jadon Sancho over on the website. Really good article from Bruce Schoenfeld talking about the youngster. Meanwhile, speaking of youngsters, I'll tell you what, if you haven't seen it, it is brilliant. Ian Dark in his garden playing soccer. Check it out.
Wondering what football commentators do when there is no football to commentate on. Well, you just have to be inventive and devise your own game to commentate on. Something like this, maybe. And here's Dark with plenty of space out to the right-hand side. Can't believe how few defenders there are around here. Oh, my goodness me! He's scored! He's in his own fantasy world. Try to stay sane, everybody. I obviously haven't. What do you mean it's been ruled out by VAR?
Craig, I love everything about that clip.
Yeah, it's sort of Ian Dark in a nutshell, our colleague and friend. I don't know if there's any truth in the rumour that the producer has asked him to come on tomorrow's show from London, but he's already been put in the back of the van in the straitjacket and taken away, because it's absolutely brilliant. When I saw Ian, when I saw the clip, I thought, I've got to watch this, I've got to see it, because as you know, and for those of us that know Ian very well, almost everything that Ian does is very funny. He's a funny guy, he's a genuine guy, and just the way he did it with the VAR at the end, because we know VAR rankles with him as well. But I loved what I noted. I noticed the dress code, the tracksuit bottoms, the lot. He had the full lot. But you know we love Ian. You know whenever Ian does anything, it's funny. He's a proper good guy. But clearly, this lockdown, being stuck at home, is driving Darkie absolutely bonkers.
Last time I looked, it's almost like 500,000 views, and he wouldn't have done it for that. He would have done it literally because he had nothing else to do and wanted to commentate. In fact, it wasn't a bad strike, was it?
No, because well, you say that it was, but I wonder if he'd be honest and say, how many takes did that actually take? Because he would have said, oh, that's not right. But it was a great strike. You're absolutely right. Ian doesn't do things for clickbait. He's a long-time esteemed broadcaster. He's got no interest. He was doing it because he thought it was funny. He was bored. He's got nothing to commentate on. Everything's just down in tools at the moment. And as you know, he's a funny... Ian is an unconscious... We would call it an unconscious comedian. He doesn't know he's been funny, but generally every time he comes on the show, or if you go and play golf with him, he does something, he doesn't know he's doing it, but you look at him and it just makes you laugh, and that's why we love him.
And what people may not know either about Ian, that it's not just soccer that he does, but also boxing. Now, if he's in the garden boxing his face whilst commentating, we know it really has gone too far.
Yeah, he's... Yes, obviously. We need to get him on. I don't know if we can get him on. We've got to find a way to try and get him on over the next few days. I know it's difficult. I know everybody's doing their best and people are coming on from homes and different countries and whatnot. But we've got to get him to come on and talk us through that if we can, because it's absolutely brilliant. But you're right, Ian turns his hands to most things. A lot of people twiddling their thumbs at the moment, just in general. We're lucky here. The weather was beautiful here in Connecticut and we're still allowed to play golf because that's the rules. That's what the governor has said. So we're at least getting out and getting some fresh air with some proper social distancing. But from others, and it looks that Darkie is one of these, they're stuck at home and they've got nothing better to do.
Craig Burley, thank you very much, as always, for joining us. By the way, a lot of content over on our YouTube channel. Be sure to check it out at ESPN FC. Over on the website, Jeff Carlisle looking ahead to the problems that the new US Soccer Federation president Cindy Parlow-Cohn will have to face over the next few months. Now, for more on that, Sebastian Salazar spoke to Julie Fowley.
Thank you very much, Dan. Julie, thanks for the time. Hope you're staying safe. Hope all our viewers are staying safe as well. Plenty to discuss in and around the US women's national team over the last week. Let's start with some comments from U.S. Soccer's new president, former teammate of yours, Cindy Parlow-Cohn. Now, she made these comments actually during a conference call earlier this week about U.S. Soccer's new CEO, We'll get to that in just a little bit. But really, the topic of this conference call, aside from the CEO and maybe even over the CEO, was the gender discrimination lawsuit between the U.S. Women's National Team and the Federation. So here's the quote that I think most people are talking about from this conference call. Quote, "I think that's one of our top priorities right now." This is what Cindy Parlow-Cohn said about the gender discrimination lawsuit. Quote, "I don't think the trial is good for either party or for soccer in this country or internationally. Obviously, our women's team is the best in the world, and I'm hopeful that we can find a resolution before this goes to trial." Julie, this was a very different tone than some of the other stuff we've heard recently coming out of the Federation. Just kind of what was your reaction to hearing this, not just from the president, but also, as we mentioned, a former teammate of yours?
Not surprising. I know Cindy clearly wants to send a message out that, look, things are going to change. It's going to be different. You can start to trust us now. And that goes to the players, right? Given all that's transpired in this past week or so. And also it's a no-win situation, Sebastian, for U.S. soccer. Even if they win the trial, they lose with public sentiment. And we've seen how they've gotten that so very wrong, over the last week and a half. And I think for the players as well, going to trial, is an unknown for them, and they don't know. And every legal expert I talk to doesn't necessarily agree on how a judge will rule on the FIFA money, which is, of course, the big X factor, because FIFA pays out so much more for the men versus the women, which is a huge part of U.S. soccer's defense. And how a judge would rule on that, I hear from both sides saying they don't know. And so I think actually the players want to settle as well. So with this change of the page for U.S. soccer and a different chapter, maybe that actually comes to fruition.
Yeah, the trial is set to go on May 5th. Obviously, with what's happening in the world, we don't know if that date will come to pass. But what we do know is that at some point this will either be settled or go to trial. Based on everything you know and given all that's changed in the last really week or two around this situation, what does your gut tell you right now, Julie? Do you think this will be settled or do you think this will play out in court?
My gut says this will be settled. And especially with the coronavirus affecting every courthouse in the nation, the chances of it actually going to trial on May 5th, as we know, are very slim. So I think that helps. It gives them a little more time. You see Cindy Parlow-Cohn doing a lot of outreach as a former player to the players, and saying, look, I get why you're angry and let's change things and let's actually sit down and discuss things. And then I think having a new CEO for U.S. soccer helps as well. Will Wilson coming in. He is, of course, everyone first points to the fact that he comes from some, but that was many years ago, over a decade ago, from Soccer United Marketing and his connection to MLS there. But he also, let's not forget, spent 8 years in his most recent role as a senior VP at Wasserman running the football division. So he's an agent. He gets the player's perspective, and has lived that side as well. And I honestly think that will be super helpful because a lot of the players are represented by what agency, Sebastian? Wasserman.
There you go. You mentioned it. There's plenty of ties between Wasserman and the Athletes Council. You mentioned Major League Soccer and Soccer United Marketing that are on Mr. Wilson's resume. Of course, they have great influence within the Federation. I don't think you can categorize this positively or negatively as anything other than like an insider hire. How do you feel about that?
I wouldn't call it an insider hire. I think he has a connection, of course, to some, which everyone is pointing out. And I get the hesitancy there. And I think actually that should be one of the first things that Cindy and Will Wilson deal with, is getting rid of some of the mystique around the some relationship and the money's going back and forth, and provide some transparency and ask for some transparency there, because that really is the root of all of this, is that there is no transparency to the interactions with some, with MLS and with U.S. soccer and those three entities. So, but I do think that he has on his resume all of the qualifications. He's fluent in Spanish as well, which has been a huge issue, of course, with U.S. soccer and their lack of diversity in terms of outreach to the Hispanic community, as you know very well, Sebastian. So he comes from NFL, which is a different football, But with his skill set, seemingly on paper, I don't know Will Wilson, he seems like he has all the potential to hopefully right this ship, because boy, what a mess he inherited, that's for sure.
Let's focus on some on the field matters, though, even if they're pushed back a little bit. We know the Olympics this week, we just found out, will be postponed. I don't think maybe like fans of soccer on the men's side are really talking about this as much, but in the women's game, this is a major, major deal, isn't it?
It's huge. You know, always the Olympics runs the very next year after a Women's World Cup, which is why no one has ever won a Women's World Cup. And then in that very tight turnaround, won the Olympics the next year. They've never done that back-to-back double. It was something the U.S. women were very focused on, but they also understood it's hard to do. So I actually think the delay for the women is a plus. I think the overall sentiment is, okay, we can take a breath, we can release, we can let go a little bit and build. And I actually spoke to Carly Lloyd, and she said, and no surprise here, she said, you know, the delay actually means just another year for me to get better individually and for us as a team to get better. And so that really is the mindset I think the U.S. women, at least, are coming into this with.
This will change, though, some of the calculations for Vlatko Ananovsky, right? Because you mentioned Carly Lloyd. Sure, she'll be a year older. But Alex Morgan, in theory, would be a year further removed from her pregnancy. So she might be available. So this could really change actually who's on the field for the U.S. at these Olympics, couldn't it?
Yeah. If you're Alex Morgan, who is due in April with her baby, you're like, okay, there's a chance now. I've got a year and some. I mean, that was great news for her. But yeah, it's a whole different equation, of course, because now you could theoretically look at more players. You could bleed in some younger kids. Now you've got a year plus to actually build the team, develop the team, look at some new players, look at some new positions. I think Vlatko Andonovski was very, I wouldn't say unwilling, but very reticent to actually do that because he knew of such the tight turnaround and how fast the Olympics were approaching. And so now I think it opens that window up to actually see more players. And obviously you get potentially Alex Morgan back into the equation.
All right, Julie, that's all I've got for today. Thanks as always for the time. As we said at the top of the segment, stay safe. That goes for our viewers as well. Dan, back to you.
Julie Fowley and Sebastian Salazar, thank you very much. Just a reminder, ESPN FC will be back on your screens tomorrow.
Though we're apart these days, we're sharing more. So at GEICO, we'd like to say thanks. Thanks for sharing your savage dance moves. Thanks for sharing your DIY haircut fails. Thanks for sharing your inner lip sync star. Now it's our turn to share with the GEICO Give Back, a 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for current and new customers. Because we're committed for the long haul, the 15% credit lasts your full policy term. Visit geico.com/giveback for more info and eligibility.
Napa know-how.
Get all the quality parts you need at your locally owned Napa. Because right now, when you order from Napa online, you can pick up curbside at your local store in just 30 minutes. Or get your order delivered direct to your door with free one-day shipping and over 160,000 quality parts when you spend $50 or more. Quality parts delivered quickly and safely. That's Napa know-how.
Napa know-how.
At participating stores, standard ground shipping and exclusions apply.
Sad news coming out of France today. Michel Hidalgo, the coach of the team that won Euro 84, passing away at the age of 87. Frank Leboeuf is with us. Frank, I know this was someone you were very fond of.
Yes, I was somebody that I really liked talking to, and we knew that he was ill, and but it's always too soon when you see somebody passing away. He was a fantastic person first, but also, and it's why we talk about him, he was a fantastic coach. He was a football player before, winning 3 times the championship, and then become almost straight after the national team coach with a success in 84 with the Euro. But also reaching the semi-final of the World Cup in 82. He was somebody who changed the football in France by the spirit that he gave to the players and the way his team played.
Some like me, Frank, maybe a little too young to remember that team in 1984. They were a bit special, weren't they?
Yeah, they were special because they were thinking about attacking, not too much defending, but they were special because you had the four fantastics in the midfield with Fernandes, Tigana, Gires, and Michel Platini. And those guys were absolutely fantastic. And the nickname of that team was the Little Brazil. It tells you a lot about the way that team was playing football. And when I talked to those players who became my idol and somebody, some people to follow to become successful, we always think, even the 98 team, that team was a better team than our team. They should have won the World Cup in 82. They won in 84 with the fantastic Michel Platini and Michel Hidalgo, of course. But they were the best of the best in the French football, and that's because of Mr. Hidalgo.
Frank Leboeuf, thank you very much for joining us. By the way, Frank will be with us on Extra Time today. You can check that out, as always, over on our YouTube channel. Obviously, Ian Dark won the internet today. Runner-up, Robert Lewandowski in his garden, showing us pretty much how Shaka Hislop looks these days when he plays soccer. Nice moment there for him and his family. Well, that brings us to the end of today's show. Next up, as promised, Extra Time with Frank and Ali. Hello, welcome into Extra Time. Thank you very much, as always, for your tweets. We welcome Frank Leboeuf and Ali Moreno with me. Ali, the first question is for you. Uh-huh. What was your best goal celebration in your career?
Ooh. I'm going to say I scored on my birthday a couple of times. And one of the times that I scored on my birthday, I actually sang happy birthday to myself and blew the candles while I was celebrating. Oh. So I was sort of giving one of these things, singing happy birthday to me. And then I blew the candle. So it was pretty significant. And I wasn't having the best season. So actually it was a minor miracle that I scored.
You know, Dan, that's what
sad,
it is.
Ali.
When when you play at front, you know, people, they score, they already, you know, have a ego like that. And on top of it, they celebrate it singing their own birthday. That's very sad.
Well, what do you want me to do, Frank? You don't want me to celebrate? It was my birthday.
No.
I scored on my birthday. What else you want from me?
I don't know. So, I don't know. Be humble.
Be humble? Scoring my birthday? Are you kidding me? I didn't score that many goals to begin with.
That's true. That's true.
Ali, haven't I seen you make it rain as well?
Yes, and that was as a promise to Alejandro, who at the time may have been 5 or 6 years old. I'm not quite sure that he understood what making it rain was, but he, I guess, heard it somewhere, whether it was in school or TV or something, and he said, and asked of me if I scored a goal that he wanted me to make it rain. So, well, that's what I did. I made it rain, baby. I had to make it rain. It was for my kid. That's what I do. I do it for the children, Frank. I do it for the children.
Okay, good for you.
What about you, Frank? Goal celebration.
Now, when I played the time where we really didn't celebrate a lot, you know. I remember scoring a goal 1-0 against Leicester at home when we won 1-0. And I went straight to the bench thinking that my coach, Ruud Gullit, was on the bench and we wanted to celebrate with all the substitutes as well. And I didn't remember that, in fact, Ruud Gullit came on the field because he was still a player, so he wasn't on the bench. So I went there for nothing. But that was fun. But it was a great goal. It wasn't a great celebration.
Cool story, Frank.
Thank you.
Man.
Jealousy. That's what we call jealousy, Ali.
I see.
We talked about this with Craig on the show. I've got to get your opinions as well. Starting with Frank, what did you make of Ian Dark's solo session? He seems out of breath near the end.
It was quite a good kick, a nice kick at the end. But I have to say that I was doing the same playing France against the Netherlands, but I was, I think, something around 8 years old. And I stopped doing that. I was 10 years old. So I don't know what to think about that video. Well, let's say Jan is still a kid, which is a good thing at the end of the day. But yeah, the composure is not really there, but good for him. He's still a kid.
You're a harsh critic, Frank. Ali, what did you make of it? It's awesome, isn't it?
It is. But it also shows the reality of what's going on around the world with this pandemic. There's some cabin fever going on. He's losing his mind.
Yes.
Let's not kid about it. The fact that he actually went through the thought process of, let me put this on video and let me put it out there for the world to see and let me describe it in the way that I would as a commentator. He's losing it. Ian is losing it, man.
Right. Hey, it made and a lot of people smile. It's had thousands and thousands of views.
Dan, you are saying that I had a harsh criticism towards Jan? What about Ali? He killed him.
We're okay. All losing it, Frank. We're Ali. All losing it, man.
Yes.
Yeah, we are. We are all. Yep. Okay. Ali, what would be worse? Steve Nichol coming round your house to fix your computer or Gab eating a home-cooked meal?
Gab, whatever. Gab with whatever. You could have stopped at Gab and that's it. It's Gab. The answer to any question, what's worse, it's Gab. Just the whole Gab experience is the worst.
For people who don't know, Gab genuinely upset your wife, didn't he, Ali?
Yes, he did. Because my wife dared to, order a steak medium well, and Gab was incensed by it to the point to where he was belittling not only my wife's choice, but also my choice. I also wanted the steak medium well, and he would not have any of it. And he would not let it go, even though I was buying the meal, because I was paying for a bet. I was buying the meal, and he was still critical of the fact that we were ordering the steak however we wanted it to order. So, yes, anything with Gab is the worst.
Okay, we're talking French food now. For Frank, I previously asked Jules on Extra Time for a French dish entree I had to try in France before I die, and he said escargot. What say you, Frank? What's your favorite French dish?
Let's say oysters. I'm really fond of oysters with a little bit of vinegar and shallots. Better than lemon. I love it. Yeah. Escargot is good, but it's only the sauce, in fact. Snails are very disgusting. It's because you add the sauce, the garlic and everything, to make sure that it's eatable. But otherwise, it's awful. But it's pretty good, but it's not very... I don't like it. I like oysters. My favorite dish would be oysters, yeah.
Final question. It's food-related as well, Ali. Mm-hmm. Arepas or papillon criollo?
What is that?
Arepas or pabellón criollo? Well, you'd have to say pabellón criollo, because the pabellón criollo will bring an arepa with it. And then all the other things that come with it, shredded beef, black beans, plantains, white rice. So, yes, the full package. You take the pabellón criollo, the arepa is part of it, and then you stuff the arepa with the shredded beef, maybe some black beans and some white rice, the plantains as well. Yep, it's pabellón criollo, because you get the whole picture of Venezuelan cuisine.
On that note, we will end Extra Time. People are going to be angry. We hardly talked about soccer at all in this. Well, maybe we'll answer more soccer-related questions tomorrow. Ali Moreno and Frank LeBeuf, thank you very much. Yes. We'll be back tomorrow for more of this nonsense. Feel free to tweet us at ESPNFC with your questions for Extra Time. Till then, goodbye.